This is The 10th Voice, Kansas City's gay and lesbian radio magazine. The 10th Voice, because you refuse to be silent.
And here we are. It is the fifth Saturday of the month of July. It's only July. It feels like it's been so much longer this year. I don't know why it comes up that way, like a deck of cards. Suddenly we're trumped. And I don't know. Things just seem to take longer. Most of today's show will be devoted to some interviews that the lovely and wondrous Elizabeth Anderson got while she was at the Golden Crown Literary Society. It's so golden, don't you know?
You look golden when you say that.
Aww. You are gold. You've got to believe you're gold.
That's right.
So, to go with this being a special edition of the Sandra Moran Radio Book Club sort of thing, since we're talking about books and writers and golden crowns and being golden, I have some literary news for you today. In Japan, books aimed at teaching elementary school students about issues concerning the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community have been published recently to deepen the understanding about sexual minorities in that country. Publishers say the books that teach basic knowledge on how, quote, anyone should be able to become happy as oneself, unquote, are not only for those who identify as LGBT, but to educate teachers and children on how to respect others' rights and be accepting of different viewpoints. Organizers of the annual Hong Kong Book Fair have been criticized for banning a number of LGBT titles from the event after they were labeled indecent. Taiwanese publisher G Books was forced to remove 9 titles from their stall, including A Gentleman's Wedding, Gay Soldier's Diary, and Crying Girls, according to the Hong Kong Free Press. The book fair's regulations state that exhibitors must not sell, quote, obscene or indecent, unquote, titles. However, G Books says none of the books contain nudity and were packaged with warning stickers. You may know that gay, bisexual, and transgender people are overrepresented in the penal system and face unique struggles. There are ways that you can show support for these individuals, which have recently been publicized. LGBT Books to Prisoners, a group, an online organization, in fact, will accept donations of favorite reads for LGBT prisoners who are looking for a good book. It accepts nearly every genre and is particularly interested in reference books, African American history books, books in Spanish, and titles on spirituality and mythology. You can find the LGBT Books to Prisoners website for more information, should you be interested in that. And Prism Comics has announced the nominees for the inaugural Prism Awards, which salute LGBT-centric comic books. Categories for the awards, which will be presented today at the Queer Comics Expo in San Francisco, include Best Short Form Comics, Best Web Comic, Best Anthology, and Best Mainstream and Small Mid-Sized Press Comics. Queer characters and storylines have become noticeably more common in DC and Marvel books, with the Prisms lean heavily toward independent comics. Supergirl being Super Number One is the only Big Two publication, Big Two being DC and Marvel, up for nomination. Other nominees include Boom Studios' Lumberjanes, Number 17, The Backstagers, Number One, and Villainette, by Scout Tran Cafe, as well as Chainmail Bikini, which just sounds like it hurts. But the full title is Chainmail Bikini, the Anthology of Women Gamers, edited by Hazel Newlevin. Now, on to the main bulk of our program. You may be aware of the Golden Crown Literary Society, whose mission is the promotion and recognition of books written out of the queer community. And Elizabeth was at their literary society, being very literary and social herself, meeting in Chicago. And she has brought back some delicious little interviews with prominent authors there. And by golly, it's something I think that is good for us to be spreading, because it's more culture, it's more books. I certainly am in favor of books, especially being a writer. Books are good. And so we have these interviews, and the lovely Linda Wilson, engineering the show, will extend a finger, not the one she usually extends to me, and be playing those interviews. And I'm getting the look now.
I have never done that to you.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
The day is still young.
That's right.
And so am I. And so let's listen to what Elizabeth has for us.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Anderson with the 10th Voice. This is a Sandra Moran Radio Book Club bonus show. I was recently in Chicago for the Golden Crown Literary Society and decided to talk to three authors who have written original and very different books. One author is Stephanie Duell, who wrote On a LARP, and Faye Jacobs, also an author, sat in on that interview. I also spoke with R.J. Samuel, and she has written a very interesting book about an Irish Indian outsider. And the third author is Jessica Webb, who just won a Lambda Literary Award for her medical thriller, Pathogen. And I started by asking Jessica about her background.
I grew up in a small town in eastern Ontario. I grew up on the water. I spent a lot of time either swimming or reading, so a lot of time in our small town library. One of my favorite things to do was to pack a backpack with snacks and a book and climb up into a tree and just sit and read, and I was always hopeful I could just kind of live there. That's not exactly how it worked. In high school, I was very lucky. In Ottawa, there was an arts high school with a bunch of different arts focus, and I was a part of the first graduating class of literary arts. I think that really helped me stay focused in high school. I was not a particularly great student, but I really loved writing. We had a lot of deadlines, we had a lot of work to do, and I think that really helped. So in university, because it's what I love to do and I didn't know what else to do, I studied English literature for 4 years. So I guess that's my background in how I came to writing.
My story too. I ended up in English literature by default. I had a field hockey scholarship, but wanted to ask you, if you live more east, why did you set your medical thriller Pathogen in the west of Canada?
That's a good question. I could see my two characters in a big city. And in Canada, we don't really have a whole lot of really big cities. So when I pictured them in a big city, my choices were, to some extent, Toronto, which is near where I live currently, and Vancouver. I know Vancouver has a very big lesbian population, and for some reason that just sort of made sense to me. I could see them in Vancouver, I could see them in this big city. So it's just where I pictured them, and it kind of snowballed from there.
One reason I wanted to talk to you is so much of lesbian fiction is in the romance category, or mysteries are, you know, thrillers. Yours is a medical thriller, so that's yet another subcategory. So why a medical thriller?
So Pathogen is the second in the series. Trigger, which is the first in the Dr. Kate Morrison thriller series. I had an image of Dr. Kate Morrison and Sergeant Andy Wiles. The whole series came from this image in my head of Kate and Andy standing across from a patient in a hospital, and there was tension and they were disagreeing about something. That was honestly the whole three books came from that image. I have always loved watching ER. I've always been fascinated by just medical things. My father's a doctor, he's a general practitioner, so I grew up around medical language and that kind of thing. So I think I was just interested. I was curious about what they could possibly be disagreeing about, law enforcement and a doctor. What could they be disagreeing about? And then I really enjoyed getting into Kate's head and looking at the world through her perspective of trying to treat people and care for people and figure things out. I just really enjoyed it.
I think many people would feel these are fearful times in Europe, certainly in the United States, and possibly even in Canada. The book seems to be perfectly suited to these times, with concerns about climate, economy, you know, housing, all of that. Were you thinking along those lines that this is a perfect time for the book to come out, or did it just happen?
It just happened. I actually wrote the Dr. Kate Morrison series 8 years ago now. I had written all three before I had attempted to get published, mostly because of my own lack of confidence. I did think about impact and what I was writing about, particularly writing in Vancouver and writing RCMP in Vancouver. I think I was more aware of maybe something more zoomed in terms of climate and culture and what was happening in the news than I was maybe a broader global perspective. As I'm talking about bombs and terrorism and Trigger, that's something I'm pretty aware of from a global perspective. In Pathogen, again, that's a much more zoomed in, takes place in a very small town in British Columbia. But I think it's hard not to think about what's happening in the global world and who's looking at these books. And I'm super curious about how someone in law enforcement, for example, views how I wrote Andy as an RCMP officer. I'm also really curious about someone who has really, maybe a not an individual, but a group of people who have really struggled, for example, with the RCMP and maybe has been impacted by some of the negativity of law enforcement. I'm curious about how they would read my books and react to it.
Your RCMP officer is 6 feet tall. She's gorgeous. She's a lesbian. She obviously would stand out on any police force. Do you feel that she's representative?
I'm not sure how to answer that. I think the RCMP, so the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in Canada, is fairly diverse. They're working really hard at being very diverse. And that comes up throughout the series, both in a positive way in terms of diversity, but also Andy's pretty clear, like this hasn't been easy, right? We're not really there yet. So probably not to some degree. In the final book, Troop 18, Andy is talking to one of her mentors who's now retired. Her mentor tells her, I was really with you when you first showed up because you were 20, brand new to the uniform, and you just didn't care what people thought about you. And her mentor had been really tightly closeted as an officer, that Andy was just Andy and she just didn't care. So I think that was an interesting perspective to bring to the table, but also for Andy to be really clear, yeah, I was able to do this. I was able to be out because of all the things that people before me have done. But she's also really clear, we're still not there. We're not there yet.
Those generational conflicts are common in the workforce. Let me ask you about the medical aspect. What kind of research did you have to do for this book? Was it extensive? Did you ask questions of people, both?
I did a lot of research for Pathogen. I do research for all my books, but Pathogen, I spent a lot of time figuring out viruses and influenzas. I will be really clear that I've forgotten the majority of what I learned about viruses and influenzas. It's just not information that sticks. I really wanted it to feel like this was a possibility. So, and more so than, you have to be really careful when you do a lot of research, because I think the tendency is then to just show, look, guys, look all this stuff I know about viruses and influenzas. And just kind of to weave it into the story so that it makes sense and it's kind of intriguing and interesting without being a big info dump. One of the things I did in Pathogen is have Kate go to basically the Canadian version of the CDC in Winnipeg, and she's learning about the viruses and influenzas. I really enjoyed that. It was a really good vehicle. I think it was a really good vehicle to let the reader in on what was going on, because Kate could ask questions and Kate was trying to figure it out. So then we're right there with her being, okay, so if she's a doctor and she's trying to take this information in, then it's okay for me to not exactly know how it's working. So a lot of research went into Pathogen.
I want to thank you for weaving it throughout your book, because I should explain for listeners who don't know that an information dump is where you essentially have an academic treatise in the middle of the book. And I've run into those. I'm caught up in the story and suddenly I'm getting 2 pages on how zoos operate today. I made that up. It's hypothetical. But I want to ask you too, obviously you were successful because you won the Lambda Award very early in your writing career. So would you talk a little about what it meant to be a finalist and then to actually win on that big night in New York City very recently.
It was an amazing moment. I remember sending Pathogen to my editor, Jerry Wheeler. He already had the manuscript. I asked for it back so that I could edit it more. I was really nervous about Pathogen. It started out at 115,000 words, and I edited and edited and edited and edited, and I sent it to him and just said, I don't even know what to do with this anymore. And he was wonderful, and he just said, I've got this. Put it aside for now, and we'll work moving forward. It went to publication. I was still nervous. I just didn't know how this was going to be received, from the medical aspect to something of a cliffhanger ending. I was so nervous about Pathogen in particular. So then to find out that Pathogen became a Lambda Literary finalist was huge for me. It really was. I felt intensely proud, very nervous. So my wife and I attended the award ceremony in New York City, which was a blast because we got to go hang out in New York City. Those sort of events make me nervous. I'm an introvert, and I don't know a lot of people in this community yet. I'm still very brand new to this lesfic community. It was a warm, welcoming, fun night. I started to shake a little bit when my category came up, and my memory of it is, you know how your memory doesn't always match up with what actually happened, but I'll tell you my memory of it is when they went to say the name, I heard just puh, and I knew it was going to be Pathogen, and I kind of dropped my head and just had this moment. I have no idea what else was happening around me, and I was just so intensely proud. There was no other self-doubt. There was no fear about having to get up and walk to the stage. I just had this moment of, I'm so proud, and I don't get that very often. I don't think a lot of people do, where you don't have competing, yeah, but this, or imposter syndrome that, or anything like that. I think that's the moment, more than the walking to the stage and receiving to the award. But that moment of feeling proud will, I think, stick with me.
Does it intimidate you a little bit? Because now you've won one of the major awards and you have another book to write. But you said you've already written the third book in the series. That was very, very smart. Did you plan that? Did you think, I'll win a big award and then I don't have to worry about the third book?
No, quite the opposite. Like I said earlier, I'd written all three of the Dr. Kate Morrison thriller series before I tried to get published, and that was completely a confidence thing. I didn't know about lesfic when I had written that series. And then when I started to try to get published, it opened up. I started looking into it, and there's this whole world and whole community and a whole set of books that I didn't really know existed, which was just amazing for me personally, regardless of book sales and conferences and awards. I loved it. I just loved it. So no, there was no sort of forethought into that. My new release that's just out this month in July is Repercussions, which is a standalone mystery thriller. And it was the first time I was not writing Kate and Andy. That was daunting. So to add a Lammy to the Kate and Andy series, then how are future books going to be perceived? And I am thinking a little bit about that moving forward, but no, there's definitely no forethought. These things just happened.
Since we're here at the Golden Crown Society, the annual convention, the Literary Society, I want to ask you, what kinds of panels do you like to participate in? What does being on a panel mean to you, and doing the author readings? Is it an experience that you have in your day-to-day life?
I'm used to speaking to groups in my day-to-day life. So my real job, I work with educators. I do a lot of training. So I'm used to being up in front of a group. That doesn't make me too nervous. Not usually reading my own words. It's a little bit different, bearing your soul a little bit. But being in front of a group isn't too bad. I'll be doing my first panel at GCLS tomorrow. I really like the different perspectives being on a panel, both as someone being on as a panelist, but also in the audience. I really like it when there's a little bit of conflict and disagreement, when someone sort of gives an impassioned response about their viewpoint and their history with the question, and then someone sort of further down takes the mic and says, well, actually, I really enjoy that. I like the disparity. I like the differences. I like to hear someone say, I've got a completely different viewpoint on this topic.
Let me ask you a little about your publisher. How did you submit to them, and how long was the process, from from acceptance to publication and contact information. How could someone find you?
I'm published with Bold Strokes Books. I went with Bold Strokes because when I did discover Lesfic, they had the majority of my favorite authors. And I submitted to them, so I had a completed manuscript, which again, I'd edited multiple times. I followed very carefully all of the submission guidelines. And I heard within, I think maybe 6 or 7 weeks. There's a lot of checking email when you're on submission. I got the email saying that Trigger had been accepted, which was huge. And I called, I think, my wife first and then my parents next. From there, they have an amazing new author sort of process. So I got hooked up with a mentor who I, what do they call them, in charge of newbie worries. And so I had someone I could connect and just say, I don't, like, how do I write the synopsis? And I'm expected to know how to write a blurb. And I do not know how to write a blurb. And it was, that was great, just having that one person I could email about anything. I emailed her about, I'm doing a reading, so any suggestions on how to do a reading, that kind of thing. Bold Strokes Books, they've got a great website and ebook store to purchase books, but also they've got blogs where authors write about maybe their upcoming releases or just something they're interested in. You can find news about who's reading where on their website. So their website is, and each author has their own page. So I have my own page, which has contact information. So readers, if they want to get in touch with me, then my Gmail is on there, for example.
Thank you so much for spending time during a busy, busy conference.
And how about that? Thank you, Elizabeth. Although I don't know whether she's hearing my thanks right now or not, as she is secluded in Canada visiting her parents, you know, those polite Canadians. But she's way far away.
She went kayaking yesterday.
She did?
Yes, across the bay. She had to wait for the planes to land on the water.
Oh, not me. I'd be sitting on the dock of the bay.
Me too.
Wasting time. I would like you to know, in case you aren't familiar with the Golden Crown Literary Society, it is a nonprofit organization dating back to 2004. It includes publishers, distributors, authors, and readers of lesbian fiction, or, as you heard, lesfic. And it is an all-volunteer organization to promote and enhance the discussion and love of lesbian literature. I have a great love of lesbian literature, I must say. I've read quite a bit of it in my life. I read the whole...
What kind do you read? The steamy love stories?
No, not that at all. But I read the whole... what's her name? Ann Bannon wrote the 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
I love that whole series. I was like, this is fascinating reading. So if you think that's fascinating reading, you can find out quite a bit about the authors who are writing now. According to their website, they want to provide learning opportunities, encourage and assistance to new and established authors in developing their craft. They want to support and strengthen quality lesbian writing, because I always support quality lesbians, whether they're writing or not, by providing educational programs and creating opportunities for readers and writers to interact, and to recognize and promote lesbian literary work. And I think those
it's a good thing.
Yeah. They also offer Goldie Awards.
Goldie Awards.
Yes, not Hawn. But
too bad.
But the Golden Crown Literary Society Awards, which I think is pretty fantastic. And thus, we continue.
This is Elizabeth Anderson of the 10th Voice. I'm at the Golden Crown Literary Society in Chicago, and I'm here with R.J. Samuel, and we're going to talk about her new book. And would you tell us the title and the publication date?
The title is An Outsider Inside, and it was published just a few days ago, July 5th, 2017.
So this is a very timely interview. I'd like to ask you a little bit of background, where you grew up, and where you live now?
I was born to Indian parents from Kerala in the south of India, and they were teachers in Nigeria. So I was born in the south of Nigeria, and I actually went to boarding school in India in the tea plantations in the Nilgiri Hills in a British military boarding school. So we used to travel as little kids, as unaccompanied minors, from Nigeria to India to go to boarding school. And then I went back, and we moved from the south of Nigeria to the north of Nigeria. It's about a 1,000-mile journey, and I think we made it in a station wagon at times. So we lived in the north as well. Then eventually, I think another 5 years later, we moved back to the south. And then at the age of 15, I went to med school in Nigeria, and I was there for 2 years, and the family were moving. They were moving to New York. My sister and I was 17, she was a few years older. We moved to Ireland and to continue medical school, and I finished there. She finished and went back to the States. I stayed on in Galway in Ireland, and I stayed there for about 30 years. But there was a three-year period where I was in the southwest of France, where I decided to, I have no idea why, but I decided to end up in there, and I had a bar restaurant. Went back to Ireland and then moved to the US in 2014. I was about 9 different places in the 3 years, but I've now settled in a little part of Atlanta where I've got a house now.
I want to ask you what you read growing up and what you read now.
So what I remember reading was when we were in Nigeria, we used to read Enid Blyton. And there are not that many people in the States who seem to know, so it's great when you meet someone.
I have to interject here. My sons and I love Enid Blyton. She was our favorite author when they were small because she was my favorite author when I lived in England as a child. So,
well, I had a TED Talk a few years ago from Chimamanda Ngozi, and the exact words that she was saying about reading Enid Blyton when you're in Nigeria and wondering why she was talking about the weather, because the weather was never a point of conversation. It was always pretty much sunny, and if it rained, it was nice, and it was nice warm rain. But all the characters in the book used to, as she said, drink ginger beer and talk about the weather. And then I went to Ireland, and then I understood very clearly. That's actually, it was a huge part of then my conversations in Ireland about the weather. And I had always wanted to try root beer, which I found I did not like at all. But yeah, we used to read Famous Five and a whole lot. I remember reading as well. I was an avid reader at a young age, and my dad said that once we were on a train from Ernakulam in India up to Uti, where I went to school, and he was dropping me off for the boarding school, and he said that I was on the train and I was reading, might have been Enid Blyton at the time, and my eyes were flicking so fast across. I was so intent that all the passengers were kind of looking across as to what this little kid was doing. But I remember reading a book called Far Pavilions, MMK, and it made a big impact on me. I remember reading the Narnia books, which I absolutely adored. There was just this thing about the wardrobe and just getting lost in it, and the snow, funny enough, and Aslan. I'll always remember that feeling with Aslan. And I loved reading, and as I grew, I read some lesbian fiction. There was a period of time in Ireland where we had to go and we ordered Naiad Press books, and I remember Karen Kalmacher and actually Diana Simmons and Claire McNabb. And then I got into a lot of technical writing for IT stuff, and I used to help people with their thesis, and I never thought I could write creatively. And then I did a creative writing class, and it was okay. I wasn't expressing myself as much as I wanted to. And then I went to France, and life happened and a lot of stress. And when I got back, I joined another writing class with Susan Miller de Mars in Galway. And she's an absolutely wonderful teacher. But I remember thinking at the time that the first exercise I went to write, I said, I'm just going to write my truth. I'm just going to write, and I'm not going to censor myself anymore. And suddenly I was writing with a different voice. And so, I mean, all the novels kind of came from that. But after France and when I started writing, I stopped reading fiction. I could not read fiction. And the only books that I read in 3 years was Letters Never Sent by Sandra Moran, because I was going to meet her for the first time, and I was kind of scared of her. Funny enough, I had never met her, and it was the most amazing for me to meet her. I loved the book. But then I went back to my reading block, and I haven't, you know, there was a period of time in France where I was reading 10 books a week. One author that I loved was Minette Walters. She's called the Queen of British Crime Fiction. And she has amazing books. I was reading a lot of psychological thrillers and Harlan Coben and a few others, but this was kind of unusual in that you never knew who were the good characters, who were the bad characters. There were no good or bad. They were just people, and some of them could totally end up surprising you. They were very unusual and very good.
Well, that takes us straight to your book, because not only is there Indian Irish, but there are characters who aren't necessarily good or bad. And I believe there's a little cafe bar, such as you said you had in France. So do you want to talk about how your life informed the book? With no spoilers, of course.
It's actually quite difficult to talk about this book without spoilers, because there are some huge issues that I bring up in it that I can't really even say what the issue's about. But a lot of the whole setting in a little village in France is very much based on the village, the restaurant, the bar, and it was set by a lake, and it's a beautiful old building. But nothing really of what happened there is in the book. So it's more about the setting, the feel. Actually, there is one incident, which when you read the book, there's an incident, there's a story of a deer that comes to stay at the village, and that really happened.
That seemed very true to me. And at the beginning of the book, there's a scene of, well, it's brief violence, and it's not too graphic, so nobody should be afraid. But would you explain a little what that scene was and why you decided to start with it?
I think for me it's a scene at a Pride March in Dublin, in Ireland. Nothing like that had ever happened to me. I know that there was a feeling of the threat of violence if you were different. And being brown in Ireland, I had one incident where, you know, most of the time it was just maybe the true meaning of the word ignorance of something, you know, where people just didn't know Indian people. Or so I had dealt with that kind of racism, but I'd never really had a situation where I felt a threat until I was walking home, and, you know, through these suburbs to the rented house, all the other college students, and there were a group of guys across the road, and I saw a stone land in front of me, and it shocked me so much, because nobody had ever been outwardly, you know, violent in any way, and this was a rock hurled across the road. When I looked across at them, they just kind of giggled, and I just walked on. So I was thinking, I haven't had to, but, you know, there are many people who have had to face that kind of violence for being lesbian or for being brown. One thing about that scene is I don't actually normally swear unless I'm playing soccer. And there's a lot of, you know, there is a bit of swearing, and there is violence. But when I write kind of more visceral, and there probably should be warnings on the book for later scenes, because there are some scenes of...
I found the book so original and so beautifully written, and the characters so complex, that it didn't bother me, because it wasn't thrown in for effect or to shock people. It grew out organically from the storyline. I want to ask you, too, some of my favorite books, I have to think about the characters, because they're so interwoven and they're so complex that after I put the book down, the book just stays with me. It's not, oh, that was on to the next book. And your book was like that. So I want to ask, if when you were writing, did you already have all of the characters in mind? In other words, did you plot it out with a storyline and an outline? Or as you started fleshing out the characters, did more characters come to mind? Because it's beautifully organized.
Well, it's strange in a way that I started this book over 10 years ago in one of the writing classes, where there was an exercise, and this character came to me during that exercise from a conversation I'd had with an ex, a story she told. It just came out in this long paragraph. That character stuck with me over the years, and I wrote four other novels, and it just kept coming back to Lana, this Indian woman. And the book started out totally differently, although some parts of those, you know, the things I'd written those years, all those years ago, I took them and I put them in. But the story changed so many times because I wrote 4 books in 2 years, and then I have not actually published anything for 3 years, and life's been happening, and so much life's been happening. You kind of wanted to stop at times. But I found that the story changed, the characters changed. The only one that remained consistently through there was Lana, through it all. And the main character then became Jaya, the Indian-Irish character. I did, all the other books were thoroughly mapped out and even structurally mapped out, whereas this book kept changing. And so all these great Excel sheets of structure just went by the side. And my poor beta reader, my one constant beta reader, was so confused. She didn't know what names, but the characters kept adding, and they added, and they added, and then I got interested in them, and so I followed them down. And so a lot of the characters there that I actually really went into depth with, they didn't even exist. It was Lana and David and Jaya with different names, and all these other characters started just coming up based on, you know, the different facets of Jaya in a way.
And you said in that panel today that you're almost Indian, almost Irish, almost American, and you live in the Deep South in the Atlanta area. So do you feel that when your parts are put together and you're playing soccer, do you feel that you belong? Or, because I've always felt something of an outsider. Do you still feel a little bit of an outsider, and does that inform your books?
The one theme, I think, throughout all my books is that feeling of being an outsider. But the funny, for me, one of my taglines before was actually the outsider looking out, because in a lot of ways, ability to be almost a chameleon and the need to, it's almost a survival thing to blend in wherever, despite being always the odd person out. Like, I was the only Indian day student in an all-Nigerian girls' boarding school. I stood out. I fit the stereotype as well, because my mom was the maths teacher and we lived on campus. And then I go to Ireland, where I'm the only, for a while, the only brown person in, you know, many of the groups that I was in. So I always felt this need to not stand out and to kind of to blend in as much as possible. And a lot of the time I would forget that I wasn't, you know, because I'm inside my skin looking out, so I don't see it. And I don't see that I'm different until someone says something, and suddenly it's this little shock of, or I, you know, walk past a mirror or something, and it's a shock of, you're different. And it was that feeling that I did want to fit in. But I found that sometimes I usually could get invited to every group. And sometimes the groups that invited me, I then felt bad for the people who were still outside. So I never really wanted to be then. All these things, you know, I was searching for this reason or this way to belong. And then I'd find I don't feel comfortable because there's other people who are still on the outside. And I'm, you know, I don't want the clique forming. So this thing that you want to belong to is part of excluding other people. So I kind of hang on the edges of it, trying to include and then be part of it and skipping in and out, you know. But it is a huge longing. But when you get to that point, it's like, I'm not sure what I'm longing for.
I'm older, and I have found I love to learn. Being around people who are different from me is so exciting for me because I'm constantly learning. And then I feel a connection, you know, so the other becomes, you know, familiar. And I wish more people would do that these days. But I want to ask you about your cover, because it's not a traditional romance cover, let's say. I love it. So would you talk about your cover and how it came about?
It's actually designed by the amazing Anne McMahon of Treehouse Studios. And I had actually designed all my covers before that. And one of my covers, A Place Somewhere, came up, was also nominated for the T. Corinne cover design last year. And it came up against all of Anne's covers. And it lost out to Anne. I admire Anne so much. So I was thinking, you know what? If you cannot beat them, join them. So, or hire them. So I decided for this one, there was so much involved with the writing of this one. It was really tight and a really tough time as well. And I said, I just don't want another thing to take up my energy. Just the cover wasn't happening for me. So Anne just called me up. She talked to me about the book. I think we talked for about an hour and a half. And then a few days later, this email arrives, and I went, oh, wow. You know, it was, now there's some details in it that we then ironed out, like, the, you know, smaller details that I really, things I wanted to get across about the cultural part of it. And she, I thought she did an absolutely amazing job. And everyone is noticing the cover. And that's fantastic.
I do want to find out how readers can contact you, ask you if you have any final thoughts, and thank you so much for the interview. So how can someone find you?
I'm on Facebook a lot. I think it's RJ Samuel Author. My website is rjsamuel.com, and so all the contact details are on that as well. I was going to say, I'm on Twitter. I am just not great on Twitter. I was like, you know, pick one and be okay at it. I think all my contact details are usually on the back of the book. I was going to say, I didn't get a chance to say it at the panel today, but I came down, I was dressed in the Indian gear, and I was going to talk about identity and differences in a way. And I came down, I walked out the elevator, turned the corner, and I bumped into, there was a woman walking towards me, and didn't even say hi or anything. It just literally, she held up the book. And I was like, oh my gosh. She holds up an outsider inside, and she looks at me and she says, I hate the mother. I hate the mother. I was like, I just started laughing. I was like, okay. And she said, God, what is she doing? What is she doing? And then she says, she's just like my mother. Go into the elevator. We go back. Actually, we're walking up to the lobby again, and she's telling me basically that she's so like her mother. And I'm thinking, this is an Irish-American woman who has gone back to Ireland, who's had a brown baby, and, you know, has had a life down there. But there are universal themes in everything we do. We have our differences, but we connect through something.
That's a perfect ending, because you and I connected at the last convention. And I would just encourage listeners to find those connections. In these times, that's a good thing. And I'd like you to say the name of your book again, and thank you so much.
The book is An Outsider Inside.
And we'll be right back.
Indeed we will be, because this is the 10th Voice on KKFI. We're listening to some recent interviews that Elizabeth Anderson did while she was at the Gold Crown Literary Conference in Chicago this year. Should you also be interested in more things about the Gold Crown and Golden Crown, like a golden mother, in case you're scouting for their website, it is goldencrown.org. And Elizabeth has one more of these wonderful in-depth interviews on authors and how they do what they do. So, literary lesbian listening.
This is Elizabeth Anderson. I'm back with the 10th Voice, and I'm at the Golden Crown Literary Society in Chicago. I have two Bywater authors with me, Faye Jacobs and Stephanie Duell. And we're going to talk about Stephanie Duell's new book, On a LARP. And I'm going to let Faye Jacobs describe it.
Good morning. On a LARP is a fast-paced, funny, fun mystery about a bunch of really smart, brainiac high school kids who manage to take care of their own needs and then solve a mystery at the same time, leaving the police baffled most of the time. And they have a grand, grand adventure, and it's called On a LARP. And I'd never read a YA novel before, but I love this. Was my first. It probably won't be my last. It's terrific.
I had read young adult novels. I'd never read one about LARPing. And I'd never read one with a steampunk emphasis. So, Stephanie, what on earth made you decide to do this kind of cross-genre thriller?
I had the idea to incorporate a LARP for a while. I met a gentleman who ran a LARP, which I thought was just fascinating. And for anybody out there who doesn't know, LARP is a live-action role-playing game. And you can think back to sort of, you might have heard of Dungeons and Dragons or even an old-time costume ball or something. And it can go on for days and days and days. And people come and they just join in and they create their own role in whatever the society this LARP is embracing. And so and I met this gentleman, Sean Jaffe, who ran a LARP. He and his partner, Michael, had designed this LARP and they'd been running it for years. They were And it was fascinating to me that people just gave up their own time to come out for a weekend and participate in basically a live theater experiment. So it kind of had always lingered in my mind. And then when I decided to commit to writing this particular young adult mystery series, they just made such a great combination.
I have to compliment you. And Faye, I don't know about you, but I didn't know a lot about LARPing. My sons certainly know what it is, and they do a little bit. But I thought, I don't know a whole book about it. And you weave it in so expertly that I never got lost. I never felt I was in a world I couldn't join. Faye, what about you?
I had no idea what a LARP was. I had to look it up. It just seemed to me, as a theatrical director, I just loved the idea that you could create a whole world and then invite people to it. And in the book, you know, it's a steampunk world that they read about on the dark web, or, and they find out about it. And but these kids are so special. And that's what's great about the book, is that the kids are so smart. And they really love the idea of dressing up in thrift shop garments and be able to go as steampunk and invade the LARP. And they love each other, and they're a whole microcosm of nationalities and types, and they're great fun. And so when they get to this LARP, they have researched it, and they know what they want to do, and there's a mystery happening, and they need to solve the mystery, and they manage to do it.
Is it a bit dangerous to do a stream of consciousness, first person, from the point of view of a genius teenager?
You know, it's funny. I love writing Sid. I can hear Sid. So for me, you know, I love Sid. I hear Sid so clearly that writing her in first person was actually a joy. It's delightful. The very tricky part is when you're telling particularly a mystery, but any story in first person, you can never know something earlier than that person could possibly have found it out. So, you know, you go back and you're reading something and suddenly you realize, oh, no, she can't know that yet. Well, then how is she going to find that out? And where's that going to take us next? And so structurally, you can never have information she can't have accessed. So it takes a lot of options off the board. And that, for me, was and remains the challenging part of Sid.
One of my favorite scenes is in the prologue. And I'm not kidding. That's not a spoiler, because you tell us early on, Sid is in the New York Public Library. And I have to admit that after I read this book, I had to go to the New York Public Library and see it. Why set it there?
I love that building. Okay, I just love that building. When you go up and you go up in between the lions and everything, I am originally from New York. I don't live in New York now. I am originally from New York. That building is so incredibly special. When you don't know things about the building, you don't realize that as you're walking all the way through the park, you're actually walking on stacks of books that are underground. And it's a wild place. And I also want to do a shout out to them, because although I staged the entire action in the library, I then called them on the phone and said, hi, could somebody tell me if I read this, if this is right or wrong, or how I can make it better or sharper? And a gentleman sat on the phone with me and went through the geography of the library to make sure I was accurate. And that is the New York Public Library. The only thing I'm sorry about is you don't see the pneumatics go by anymore.
I have to ask how long you two have been friends. And you both have a lively sense of humor, and that humor found itself into your book. So how did you all meet, and tell a little about your writing, Faye?
Well, I can tell you how we met. We were wandering around our best bookstore in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and it was the night that the 7th Harry Potter book or something was released at midnight, and there were lines and lines of people, and Steph and I looked at each other and we said hello, and we sat down and talked, and we have probably not missed a day of talking since, and it's about 8-9 years ago. Luckily for me, I write humor, and a lot of the adventures that we have shared are in those books. So it's been a really fun time. And I think it's a good match because I'm an editor and I like writing and I like editing, and we've worked together, both of us. She'll give me ideas for funny stories and adventures and clips things from the newspaper and forwards them to me. And I take a look at her writing. So it's a very good relationship. Best friends.
I think that answered it. First of all, anybody that's hanging out waiting to buy Harry Potter's new book, you already have a bond. You know, it's a fun group. And by the way, that bookstore is Browse About Books. If you're ever in Rehoboth Beach, visit them because it's a grand bookstore and the mural outside is wild. You're online. You're like, okay, so everybody's in this jazz mood waiting till midnight. So it was a place to start chatting. And the things we share in common, we're both from New York. We both adore musical theater in general. And it just took off. And as Faye said, it's been a trade-off and this and that, but it's also been just a pure friendship. It's grand.
It's very fast-paced. Now, I get the sense from talking to you that you are too. Would you tell just a little bit about your other job and how you manage to sit still at a desk?
The great news about my other job is it doesn't really require that I sit still terribly often. In my day job, I have been fortunate enough to work as a producer in television. I was the supervising producer most recently for the series Haven, which ran for 5 years, which we filmed in gorgeous, gorgeous Halifax, Nova Scotia, so that was lovely. I get to be up and on the set and over to the set and then over to the circus, which is the name for all of those trailers that are piled up. You go over to the circus, then back to the office to take a meeting, then back down. So it kind of suits me well. Writing, you write, I think, in a different place. I think when writing is good, when writing is bad, you're up every 10 minutes anyway, because anything is better than the computer in the moment. It's like, oh my God, I need to go straighten that photograph. It doesn't matter what it is. You're going to do it. When writing is good, it is as though you are running around because you are running through the pages and the words. And the words are so beautiful in the moment. It's just as captivating a world.
Faye, you do one-woman tours. Have you all ever considered a duo stand-up comedy act?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But I tell you, it's been very interesting for me because I like to joke that I broke into show business at an age where I'm more likely break a hip. But it's been a lot of fun. And I mostly tour with stories of my life and also a little LGBT advocacy thrown in. And I'm having a blast. It's a lot of fun.
Back to the book, I don't want to ever give any spoilers, but I will say that this book had me mystified in a good way from beginning to end. And it was one of those books that even though I was reading very closely, I just couldn't wait to see what happened. So the thriller aspect was so very there. In your next book, is it going to be the same genre? Or do you have a plan?
When I wrote this book, I decided to write this book, one, because, you know, and writers will talk to you about finding a character that talks to them. So I understood that I needed to write this book, but I also wanted to write this book to be the first of a series. So the series title is A Sid Rubin Silicon Alley Adventure. And it is Silicon Alley because in New York, that's what they call Silicon Valley. They call it Silicon Alley. And that's where it comes from. And so in the next book, there will be an adventure featuring this group of kids. It also will have its own ticking clock version of it. But there'll be very different stories.
I would think that working in television and seeing the narrative arc and seeing, you know, how characters flow and so on. Do you find that there is a wonderful energy flow between the two, or do you think of them as completely separate?
For me, they are separate but informed by each other. If I didn't have all the years of film, my book probably would have been 3 times as long. There is a certain amount of, I write it the way I would watch it. When I wrote my first book, The Carousel, the biggest comment I received most often and compliment was that people would say, I see the movie. So there's a certain amount of, I spent all these years giving notes and editing on this. On the other hand, though, I chose to write in a minimal dialogue environment. You know, so they inform each other, but they don't resemble each other, if that makes sense.
Wonderful answer. And I'm going to ask you a similar question, Faye. You're a longtime newspaper columnist. How has that affected your one-woman show?
Well, it's interesting because many of the pieces in my show are from my columns. But then I had to write a narrative to put it all together. And I found in doing that, the voice of the show. You can have funny stories all along the way, but the voice of the show is the march towards equality and how you can have a good time along the way, even though you're talking about very important topics. And I love history. and I love gay history, and I love to talk about it. And it's become really sort of one informs the other. Like Steph said, you really can't separate what you know, and it all works together, which is great fun. And I also love to promote things. And so here I am promoting Stephanie's book, and I just can't say enough about how wonderful it is for young people to read this book, because it's about a group of kids. They love each other. They're happy with each other. Different ethnicities and straight, gay, young, old, nothing matters to these kids. And I hope that's how life is very soon.
I hope it is, too. And I do believe it should be in every public library and every school library. One of the things that I absolutely love about this radio show is Sandra Moran set it up so that we featured good books. And I, some years ago, maybe 10 years ago, thought there weren't that many. And I'm finding that there are. You just have to find them. And On a LARP by Stephanie Dool is definitely one of them. I'd like a few last words, and if you'd give how someone could find you and find the book.
And I'm just trying to think of my few last words. I'm kind of blown away by the compliment of that. And for those that don't know, Elizabeth Anderson is a remarkable copy editor. She is also a remarkably... I was very lucky when my life crossed paths with you, and I thank you for that. In terms of finding me, I am on Facebook, Twitter, etc., so forth, but my website is stephaniedool.com, which is stephaniedool.com. And from there, all little buttons take us everywhere. The thing I will ask, because I ask it everywhere I go, if you read the book and you enjoy the book, please go review the book. And I say that about any book you are reading right now. It means a great deal to those of us who write.
Faye, same thing. Where could someone find you?
FayeJacobs.com, F-A-Y without an E. I love to say that I'm in brick-and-mortar bookstores with my book, Fried and Convicted, and hopefully they will find me and find Steph's book, On a LARP, because we love to write, and we really love meeting our readers as well. Thank you for this opportunity to talk a bit about books, especially Steph's new book.
Thank you both so much, and Stephanie, thank you for the compliment. I want to mention that if anyone wants to friend her on Facebook, she's hilarious. Faye, I already knew you were hilarious in person, in a show, and on Facebook. So thank you so much, and let's go enjoy the conference.
That was wonderful. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. We're glad that you took the time to record those things, because it's important to know what people are doing, I believe. If you continue listening, of course, you will be able to hear This Way Out, because right now, as you are listening, it is 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.